The slogan on British Columbia license plates reads, "The most beautiful place in the world." Living in Prince George, BC, I get a good share of ribbing about that. It's fair that not everybody sees the beauty of this place, but all you have to do is scratch the surface to find a wealth of stunning natural features, wonderful people, and a vibrant arts and culture scene. It's no wonder that the people who make fun of me aren't aware of it. We don't have a lot of film crews running around capturing every moment of every wonderful thing that happens in this area. Little media outlets like ours try to do it justice, but we don't mind other people giving it a whirl. TELUS Story Hive is a relatively recent project that has brought some things to light that may not have otherwise.
TELUS and TELUS Story Hive are really focused on uplifting voices that have traditionally been left out of the media landscape. So whether you're an Indigenous person, whether you're from a racialized community, whether you're LGBTQ, we want to hear your stories.
Speaking is Aaron Shaw with TELUS.
And I'm a senior program manager with StoryHive.
Local fellow Aaron Yule decided to harness the opportunity the program provided. And you might be wondering, who's he? Do you have to be a gifted hotel to get behind the camera?
Right now, I'm in school, but in a past life, I was a professional musician and was kind of looking at doing new things around the community. So this kind of came up. So I went back to school after COVID. So we were touring a lot, and then just COVID hit, and it just wasn't sort of feasible to keep doing that. So I went back to school and hopefully getting into med school this year.
TELUS and TELUS Story Hive are really focused on uplifting voices that have traditionally been left out of the media landscape. So whether you're an Indigenous person, whether you're from a racialized community, whether you're LGBTQ, we want to hear your stories.
They have a very similar intent of community campus radio, and there's some overlap there.
You can be anybody. And as Aaron says, you don't have to do it alone.
And who's your partner in crime in the filming of Then Now?
Two, actually. So my brother was one, my brother Darby, and then one of our best friends, Adam Harris-Simiak, who runs Frost Films, helped us as well.
This project was accomplished. It was successful. It looks beautiful. Anybody listening to this segment can visit Then Now. Go on YouTube, then/now. You'll find it on YouTube, mm-hmm. TELUS Story Hive Production. You've had these technical challenges the night of. I'm kind of curious, what were some of the obstacles when you first conceptualized this idea and getting to the actual execution the night of? How did you figure out that Story Hive would be a spot where you could access funding instead of, say, I don't know, Creative BC?
So, we had talked. Creative BC is, we actually have done work. We've worked with Creative BC before, and they're a little bit more aimed at artists and companies. So, you know, people who are kind of trying to create their brand, or it's basically an established brand. That's kind of what Creative BC generally does. They have programs for new and up and coming artists, but generally speaking, it's like, are you a band who's trying to put your own work forward, versus Story Hive, which they're much more, you know, make whatever you want. You know, so it's really much more, I guess the word I'd use is adventurous almost. Like it's more like venture capital. Like, we just want you to make what you want to make and see what happens, rather than Creative BC, where it's a little bit more like focused on a long term. Are you going to keep doing this? Is this like a regular thing that you want to be doing? And so it was just a little bit more, TELUS was just a bit of a better home for us rather than Creative BC that way. In terms of obstacles when we were planning it, there was actually quite a few. So one of the biggest being balancing sort of our vision for it and our budget, because though, you know, a $10,000 grant sounds like a lot of money, when you start getting into it, it's really not. It's the old saying is, a lot of money to make, not a lot of money to spend. If you're putting on a show like that, it's easy to have things run away from you, because that extra cool little thing of gear is, you know, that's only, oh, look at that. That's cool. That's $250. That's nothing. And then you do that 15 times, and suddenly, you know, you've spent a huge portion of your budget on things that you didn't even necessarily need. So a lot of it was, you know, planning the budget. A lot of it was working around everybody's schedules. My brother lives in Vancouver. I'm going to school full time. Adam runs a film company. So you start balancing everybody's schedules. And then on top of that, you know, we had six artists that we had to pick. So we had to pick who did we think was able to fit into the night. So because we wanted to keep things really minimal, that, you know, Trench is not a very big place, so we couldn't have drum sets and big amps and all this kind of stuff. So we had to choose people who could play acoustic. We had to choose people who were songwriters and had been songwriters for a long time. So because the whole concept of it, for those who haven't seen it, is essentially we ask songwriters to play their first song they ever wrote and their most recent song they ever and then tell us the story of how you got from A to B and play songs along the way. And not necessarily, you know, their most popular songs, but the songs that sort of did something. So, you know, Amy Blanding had a really cool sort of take on this, and she played the very first song she ever wrote. So she had played for a long time in Black Spruce Bog, and then she wanted to start writing on her own. And so you actually got to hear the first song she ever wrote, and then the songs that kind of had an important part of her career, and her most recent song. And so it was very cool to hear that. But, you know, not necessarily every artist in town is able to kind of fit all those things, even though we would have loved to have them. And so it was really hard picking all those people and then coordinating with all of them and, you know, making sure that they sort of understood the show. It wasn't supposed to be just another show. We wanted them to tell a story. And you're used to, as a musician, being told, oh, you're going to play a show. You have 30 minutes. And so you pick your, you know, 9-10 songs or whatever you're going to play. Most artists actually only got through 4 or 5 songs in the 30 minutes because they had to tell the stories. They had to tell who they were, what they were about, like where they started and where they are now. That was, you know, that's where the name come from, then and now, right? There was actually quite a bit, a lot of it logistical in the end, which I wasn't really expecting. I was kind of expecting it to be relatively smooth sailing, but it actually ended up being a lot more work, which is always how it goes.
As far as this grant went, did it enable you to get some equipment that you needed, or was it mostly focused on financing your wage and ability to just do this thing?
The vast majority of it actually went just to the night. So we had a few sort of outside costs, like, you know, marketing and that kind of thing, but most of it actually went to equipment rentals and the actual production of the show. It turns out it's actually quite expensive to put on shows the way that we kind of had envisioned it in our head, because it was such a complicated process. We wanted to record everything live. We wanted to make sure that it looked good. We wanted to make sure that everything sounded good. So it was kind of like doing 3 or 4 things all at the same time.
So much can happen. A single drop of rain can set the whole thing off.
Yeah, well, I mean, we had that. So we had, you know, we had all sorts of tech issues that we had to work around, and how do we do that? And you know, at the end of the day, it was really about making sure that the artist sounded good and looked good. And so, you know, having a big tech issue doesn't reflect well on them, even if it's not their fault at all. So there was a lot of sort of planning around that. And so we spent a lot of time figuring out exactly what we wanted to show and how we wanted to do it.
Right. Yeah. You don't necessarily know what the parameters are that you can inform the artist. Okay. You know, this is what you can and can't do until you're actually in those almost late stages of planning, when all of a sudden you find, oh, yeah, this is a really hard barrier and we're going to have to respect that barrier.
And, you know, you don't want to stand on their toes, right? You don't want to tell an artist what they can and can't do, because that undermines the whole point of the exercise, right? You want to be able to say, like, hey, if you want to play that song, play that song. If you want to tell that story, tell that story. And so it was hard to, but also be like, hey, we have this sort of format that we want you to fit yourself into, which has different sort of meanings for everybody, right?
This Then Now series captures some great local storytelling. There's stories that we very likely would not have heard otherwise, unless we happen to sit down with one of these local musicians in a cafe or a pub or whatever and ask them directly. Not everybody's gonna have the opportunity to do that. These are our local rock stars, and
yeah,
it's a fantastic exploration of their journey. Was there an aspect of your own journey as a person in the community, as a musician, that kind of inspired you to say, hey, I think there's more beneath the surface of just what we see presented on stage here? I want to know more.
Yeah. It was actually kind of us looking, when we were sort of taking a step back from music And, you know, at one point I really started missing it. I stumbled across one of our old records and thinking about it, and I had showed it to a friend, and she was like, "You sound absolutely nothing like yourselves, like you guys do now. You sound nothing like you guys do now." And that was always sort of something I was like, haha, yeah, lots of change. And then one day we were talking, and this is something I talked to my brother about a lot because we played music together. And one day him and Adam were discussing it, how they changed it, and they kind of came up with this concept, like, well, what about if we just had people talk about it? Like, what about if we just had a show and had people discuss where they are and how they think they got there? Not, you know, not sort of this sort of perception that everybody has, you know. You look at people, you look at bands and you go, oh, well, you know, they obviously started listening to blah, blah, blah. And they started, you know, wanting to make a record that sounded like that. And that's just not true. You don't sit there and go, well, I really want this to sound like Paul Simon. You go, oh, you know, that's weird. That kind of song turned into a Paul Simon song. We have my brother and I have a song that weirdly turned into a Billy Joel song, and we didn't really mean it to, but that's kind of where it ended up. It has this sort of 80s piano and a sax solo and all this kind of stuff. And it's like, oh, that's Billy Joel. And, you know, I'm a big fan of Billy Joel. I've listened to him a lot, but it wasn't ever anything we meant to do. And so I think it gives the layperson who's never written a song or hasn't even dipped their toe in music a very different view of the process behind the songs that they love and the artists that they see. It's not this sort of, you know, it's not a linear path. I think we oftentimes in our modern society get this idea of a linear path from one thing to the other. And, you know, you get this, you know, artists and artists do this on purpose, you know, give this idea that, you know, oh, we know exactly what we're doing and we have a plan. And the truth is you absolutely don't. You don't know when you're going to write your next best song. You don't know what it's going to be about. You don't know. Sometimes you won't know what the song's about until you finish writing it. And so it's a lot more sort of grasping at smoke than it is following a very, very clear path. And it was kind of really nice to listen to people and how they've kind of navigated that. Because we know how we did, and it was just really interesting to hear how everyone else has.
If people want to check the Then Now series out, where can they find it?
So the easiest place for most people, I think, will be YouTube. If you put in then/now into YouTube and then probably add Story Hive just to be safe, they'll all show up. So all six episodes, six wonderful episodes. Each one is its own standalone concert. So you can watch it from beginning to end. It's about 30, each one's about 30 minutes. And then if you have Telus Optic, it's also on there. So you can go to the on-demand and you can find it in there. And so lots of people have been watching it at home. And yeah, so you can really enjoy it and see. Those are kind of the main places. And I think that a lot of the artists are going to be releasing cuts from it as well on their own YouTubes.
What would have happened if you had failed? I mean, this was a gamble, right? You know, when you're putting all the money on one event, what was at stake?
You know, one of the things you learn when you're touring a lot and you're playing a lot is that failure is not a reason to stop. Failure is a reason to continue. We had a rule when we were playing that we called it the rule of 10%. 10% of all the sort of emails and cold calls and all that kind of stuff that you send out, we'll get a response, and probably only 10% of those are going to be a yes. So you kind of are always, don't go into things with the expectation that they're going to be this wild success. You kind of go into it with the expectation that, oh, this is something I want to do. I'm going to try 100 different things to make it work, and probably only one of them is going to work. And so the fact that it was a success was really, really welcome. But if it had failed, we would have just done the next thing. It would have been just another thing we tried to make something. And to that end, making something is never not worth it. I've never made something where I didn't learn something or make a deeper connection with somebody, it's worth it for the memories and it's worth it for the learning and it's worth it for the process. Like, it was wonderful getting to make something with my best friend and my brother. That is invaluable. So how can you fail if you're working with people you love?
Clearly a positive experience for Aaron Yule. But what about you, dear listener? Here's Aaron Shaw.
Okay, imagine I'm 19 and mm-hmm. I saw this great Then Now series and mm-hmm. it featured local artists. I'm inspired. I know people that make music. I think I can do this, but I don't have a camera. I don't have a computer. I don't have experience. But if I can make a solid application, is Telestory Hive a good path for me to pursue my dream?
Yeah, we welcome applications from people in different communities that have local ideas. We're really happy to have anyone with no experience apply. That's what these programs are for. Even if you've never picked up a camera, even if you don't know what a tripod is, you've never used YouTube, we're going to help you through that.
Awesome.
So feel free to apply.
And so the program can buy equipment and also provide some training to use that equipment.
Yeah, basically we give you grant money, we give you some basic training, but what we do want to emphasize is it is what you make of it. It's a self-guided journey. We're going to give you the tools that you need, but you do need to commit to learning it on your own. Filmmaking, content creation is not as easy as people think it is. It's really important, and it's a really big part, I think, of being a digitally literate person. And we are happy to support people in their journey to become good content creators. But there does take a certain level of self-direction to do it and to do it well, but we're here to help. That's what we're here for. We're here to make sure that you have the resources that you need, and we're going to provide distribution on TELUS Optik TV and other online channels as well.
Experimentation with audio and video, no longer just available at your community and or campus radio station, but also with your internet provider. If TELUS is serving your community, give it a shot. Ian Gregg with CFUR Radio, 88.7 FM in Prince George, BC, on traditional territory of the Clay Lee Tene. CFUR.ca.